Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Michael Pressler, 11 years of combination experience, third generation firefighter, currently a probationary firefighter on the 9-2 engine with the FDNY. Michael is no stranger to the fire service as he's been surrounded by this profession his whole life. He got his start as a live-in with a little old fire department called Christiana Fire Company in Delaware. Not sure if any of you have heard of it. The way Christiana operates plays a huge role in how Michael believes all firefighters need to view the job. From there, he knew he wanted to become a career firefighter where he could get the chance, but always had dreams of the big city. With that, I present Mr. Michael Pressler.
Hi, I'm Mike Pressler. I'm currently assigned to 92 Engine with the FDNY. I got in the fire service when I was pretty young. It's always been a part of my life. My father was a career fireman in the city of New York. And his father, my grandfather, was a volunteer chief. So it's always been around. You know, all our closest family friends are firemen. And I joined the local volunteers when I was 16 years old, and I couldn't pack up yet. And then I actually went away to college and took a little break. I went to school up in the city of Buffalo. It really wasn't part of my life then. But then when I finished college, I started getting involved again. And I ended up doing a ride-along down in Christiana, Delaware. And fell in love with it, and I joined there and started testing everywhere I could, and that's really how I got started.
Okay, so it's safe to say, what are you, probably third generation?
Yep, I'm a third generation fireman.
Okay.
And it's been a pretty awesome ride. I'm a second generation New York City fireman, and I wear my father's badge number, so it's been pretty special.
That's awesome. That's not very many people can say that they get to do that. So that's awesome. So you started out as a volunteer like a lot of us do, and then you transitioned to the career side. So my first question to you is, most people that are like fire service buffs, and you know, such as myself, when you said Christiana Fire Department, definitely know a lot about Christiana. They are a very aggressive, progressive fire department. So upon joining that department, how was it laid down to you, like the foundation of how they operate?
Well, like most people that walk through the doors there, they come from places that aren't quite as busy as they'd like. So a lot of people are pretty green when they walk in the doors there. And you're immediately welcomed, and you kind of get their layout of how they do things, and then you make of it what you how much you want to show up. And for me, I was at a unique place in my life where I could pretty much move in right away. And now you're making runs, you're making fires, you're training all the time. You're with a group of people that always want to train. Most of them are trying to get hired somewhere, so there's a nice collective group that are all like-minded, trying to do the same thing. And I got some of my closest friends in the world I met there, and you know, they've all gone their own paths, but we, you know, that's where we all got our start. And it's nice because it brings a group of people from all over. You know, there's guys that are you know, in their 70s that are chief officers. There's guys that are 18 that have never been to a fire before, and everyone's there for the same reason.
And upon walking through those doors, I mean, you kind of had the notion of like you really want to be a fireman. Like most people don't go to those places if they want to be slacking off, sitting in the recliners all day. So my question to you is, who did you find, either what individual or individuals did you find to try to emulate to make yourself like a gem of fireman?
Well, I was in a unique position because actually my father rode there before me, and he was the one that was like, if this is something you want to do, why don't you come check it out? And his very close friend, Mike Lombardo, who was the commissioner of the city of Buffalo, retired down to Delaware. So he was riding there. And so I went there and checked it out, and I loved it right away. And then you start meeting the players that are there that have their own fire service career and distinguished and are in it for the same reason. And then I started, luckily, when I got there, there was 8 full-time career employees, and they were hiring 8 more. So it is a combination shop. So those 8 that they were hiring, I kind of started with, along with some other volunteers that are still, you know, a part of my life. Like Joe Shanahan, Kevin Gill. Kevin's a DC fireman. Joe's a Delaware State Trooper. We all kind of started at the same time about, and some of those eight are still there. A couple of them have been promoted. So it's kind of that's the group that I started with.
Okay, so the term aggressive or aggressiveness, whatever the case may be, what does that mean to you?
How it's been instilled to me, and I think everywhere I've worked and volunteered, you are going to give anyone in that building a chance at living until s the chief outside decides that you can't any longer. So everything is full systems to go until someone tells you no. And luckily, in that system and all the systems I've been a part of, that's way above my, responsibility. So someone will tell me when it's time to pull back the reins. But until then, you will find any means necessary to get whoever's in that building out. And coupled with the engine's got to do their job so the people in the truck can fulfill that task.
Okay. All right. Love the answer. With that being said, so you got the Christiana, you got adapted to their mindset, the way they operate, things of that nature. So at what point did you tell yourself, like, hey, I want to do this as a career? And how many other or how many places did you apply to?
I tested anywhere any place that would give a test in those years. So pretty much all up and down the East Coast. Ironically enough, the place I ended up choosing was about 20 minutes up the road from Christiana, but I tested everywhere. I believe I took the test that I got hired off of in New York either at the very end of 2016 or the beginning of 2017. I think it might have been January 2017. So when that looked like it wasn't going to go through and they weren't really hiring, and then COVID hit, I was pretty set on staying where I was at. But at the time, I was testing everywhere, and I was looking for a place that was busy in a city setting that, I could really grow and keep going to fires and learn.
Okay. So what was that first place that you accepted?
Believe it or not, in a 2-day stretch, I got hired. I got an offer from a place down in Georgia, and then a couple hours later, the city of Wilmington called, which is in the northern part of Delaware. And I wasn't ready to move away. And Wilmington sees some work, and they have a really nice. It's a smaller department, but it's pretty close-knit. It's far enough away they didn't run in with Christiana, but yeah. So the city of Wilmington, I got hired there at the end of 2017, October of 2017.
Okay, so my and I've seen the videos from Wilmington. I'm pretty sure that's the same Wilmington we're talking about. Do they call something, or maybe I don't want to confuse it, but I'm going to ask anyway, Aetna Hose Company, or is that something completely different?
Oh, Aetna's pretty close too. That borders Christiana. That's their first due to like the University of Delaware.
Okay.
They border the state of Maryland is on their one border of their district.
Okay.
That's a little bit farther away from the city of Wilmington, but Christiana and Aetna, they'll run in, a couple hundred runs a year together. They
Okay.
share 95, and then if you keep traveling up 95, you go through the city of Wilmington, and eventually you would hit Philadelphia. But
Gotcha. Gotcha.
they're all
Okay.
pretty close, and if you look at Delaware as a whole, those are probably the three busiest places to be a fireman.
Okay. So you get on Delaware. Was it everything you thought it would be?
Yeah, it was a good time. I got hired. They're now my best friends. But it was a winter academy. It was very cold. I think we did 13 weeks. Luckily, Christiana really sets you up to get hired somewhere. So I was already an EMT. I already had some of the certs that the city required. So my process was probably a little easier than some. But yeah, we went through an academy together, graduated, hit the streets in the middle of winter, which is, pretty much fire season down there, and off to the races we went. Went by very quick.
Okay. So you mentioned, earlier that you apply anywhere and everywhere, including FDNY. So what was it like? Were you shocked when you got that call? Were you like, oh, I pretty much thought like, they had forgotten about me, or like, I just like to hear, your process with that.
Well, when I first got my test grade for FDNY, I thought it would just be a matter of time before they called. And I actually told my girlfriend Emma, I was like, oh, any day. She went to the University of Delaware. She's from Jersey. But I was like, any day I might get this call to go to New York. And this was early on in my Wilmington career. And then as COVID approached, that dream kind of went away. So we were looking to place some more permanent roots south, because I didn't think that call would come. And even when they were hiring, it was they normally hire over 300 at a time. They put in a half class and a class of 75 during COVID, so it didn't look like it was going to happen. And a lot of people that really want that dream of going FDNY, they go the EMS route and then promote out of that. And that wasn't in the cards for me. I just wanted to be a fireman. Looking back now, that could have taken me down a different path. They kind of help those guys out. That time counts now, and you're in the system already. But for me, I wanted to go to fires. I wanted to be on a fire truck. And the city of Wilmington is a pretty unique place. They do not ride an ambulance at all. They'll make medical calls from the engine, but they don't get detailed to an ambulance. So all your time is on the rigs. And it was a good spot. It was the right spot to learn.
Okay. All right. So you get the call. Are you shocked? Are you like, oh snap? Like, what's going through your head?
I was pretty excited, because I always been a pretty driven person. I've worked since the day I was old enough to, and in the year and change leading up to that, I was just a live-in fireman at Christiana, not really making any money, just kind of spending, probably 28 days of the month at the firehouse, which was awesome for my, for training, experience, making fires, making runs. But the other part of my life took a big pause. So it was a pretty big relief to get that call too. And it was a spot that kept me on the East Coast, kept me close to Christiana, kept me close to my family that was still up in New York. So it was a pretty exciting day. I was a lot of relief and a lot of excitement.
Okay. All right. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey through FDNY's Academy? Because that's no easy feat.
Yeah, especially my second academy. So I did 13 weeks in Wilmington, and then 19 weeks for the FDNY. And I was kind of in between. My girlfriend, long-term girlfriend, she was still in Delaware. So I actually spent the FDNY Academy living with my parents upstate, which is a good 75, 80 miles to the Academy every day. So
Ooh.
the way the FDNY Academy works, it's a staggered start time. So you get 2 weeks at the early time, 2 weeks at the late time. And that's for the early class. So half of that time, I'd set my alarm for 2:20 and be on the road by 2:50, and then get to the parking lot, hang out for a little bit, and then no phones, no outside contact. You're just focused on learning the FDNY. Get back out to my car, 2 hour drive north. Eat a quick dinner, go to sleep, and do it all again. 19 weeks.
Wow, that is some dedication.
It was challenging for sure. I did basically 20,000 miles, 21,000 miles in about 19 weeks on my car.
Damn, that's crazy. 220 out the door by 250, so you give yourself 30 minutes, a 2 hour drive. And what are the times of the academy?
Official stars, you basically, like, everyone gets put in a squad, so you're with about 25 other people. And individually, you'll decide when to meet up, but you're ready to go walking in. Probably, I think it was like right around 5:30. I think we lined up and walked in, and that's a chance to like make sure everyone's squared away. Everyone's clean shaven, everybody is ready to go for the day. If there's any exams that day, you kind of go over the stuff you got to know. And it was pretty fun. It was another winter academy, so I never endured a summer academy, which I'm sure has its own unique challenges. But New York winters are pretty tough, so you'd be standing out on Randall's Island, getting ready for the day, freezing. But they say it's
Okay.
the most fun you never want to have again.
No, that's a lot too. I mean, because what were the tough like what were the tough days scheduled? Like, I know for down here, a lot of departments when it comes to ladders, like ladders is hell week. And so I just can't imagine you having like a difficult class and then having to take a 2 hour drive up back home, tired.
Yeah, that's The hardest part for me, luckily I've been a pretty big nerd, so I read a lot of the stuff, you know, just over my time in the fire service. So I was always reading FDNY stuff, so that gave me a nice little jump start. But the hardest part of my day was you know, driving there and back, and making enough time. The weekends I would drive down to where my girlfriend Emma lived and see her. So, you know, Mondays were real rough because I would leave very, very early to get there on time. And you know, you have to cross either a bridge or a tunnel to get into the city from upstate. So I always got there pretty early just to make sure I didn't hit traffic. So I did, you know, exaggerate a little bit. I would always be pretty much the first car in the parking lot just because I didn't want to be late. By the end, that 45 minutes early ended up being a nap.
I don't blame you there. All right. So you go through the academy. Do they do a process where, like, we would call it like top dog or top candidate gets their first pick-ish, or how does that work?
The top two in FDNY's academy, kind of. I mean, it always depends on the department needs, but they have a pretty good idea of where they want to go, and I think the job does a pretty good job of trying to get them there. So, and then same thing for like the fitness award winner gets a pretty if they can, you know, they try to help those guys out. I was pretty close to the top of the class. I think I ended up finishing third, so just outside of that. But I ended up going to the spot I really wanted to go. So for me, it was you know, all ended up being the way it was supposed to go. So
So you got your first choice was your assignment.
yeah, and luckily I think manpower is pretty low, so they you know, there was an opportunity to go there. So but yeah, backtrack to my father. He was assigned this engine company back in the 80s, so it's kind of full circle, and you walk in the doors of those firehouse, and again, it's everyone is the I've o always somehow found a place where everyone's pretty like-minded. So it's a, you know, it was a great firehouse. Everyone's there for the same reason.
So can you tell us what it was like for on your first shift walking through those doors?
Yeah, my first shift was actually on the first day I was eligible to work. My groups weren't in for a little bit, so I actually picked up an overtime shift as my first shift. And it was a big, I thought I was always on busy companies, but 92 is particularly busy. They do, you know, just about 6,500 runs a year. So most of your day is spent going in and out of quarters, answering runs. And so you see the first due very quickly. You know, in the first week, you'll see, you know, a couple hundred different buildings. And yeah, it's right, you know, from day one, from the minute you walk in, you're ready to go. There is no downtime.
Okay, 60. That's impressive. That's impressive. So with that being said, let me see here if I had any more questions I wanted to ask you. 6,500 runs a year. Now, the FDNY, yes, they have their own EMS division, you know, under the FDNY umbrella, but you guys are also like first responders, right? You respond to it. Is it certain calls or all calls?
I'm just a probie there, so I don't know the exact breakdown, but we do answer EMS calls, so we're required to be certified first responders. So little one step below an EMT. So that's the level of care we provide. And basically, if the engine can get there first, you know, they start patient care. But if an ambulance beats you there, unless it's a serious call, you'll get canceled and head home. But the South Bronx is very busy, so oftentimes the engine is there first.
Okay. All right. With that being said, I'm going to ask you a question of realistic training. I'm not going to say on a small budget because FDNY doesn't have a small budget. So, with that being said, what kind of training do you do? And it doesn't even have to be with the FDNY. It could be with Christiana. Like, what kind of realistic training did you guys perform?
Yeah, I feel pretty unique. I've been in probably a real, you know, low budget place, a medium budget, and now, you know, probably pretty close to an unlimited budget. But so where I worked before, the city of Wilmington, that's a pretty tough city. They didn't have much, you know, budget for training, but we trained every day. The city has a ton of vacant buildings, so you know, that's where most of our drills were. And then, you know, Christiana. Every they're busy. Every box alarm is treated like a fire, so they're getting their training in there amongst their, you know, more formal drills. But luckily, I've been afforded the opportunity to go to FDTN, the Fire Department Training Network out in Indiana. And that's a little expensive, but if there's any room in your budget to take classes there, that's the most realistic training you can get anywhere in the country. So, and then if you look at a place like Christiana, and now actually Wilmington, it was just starting to happen before I left. They make a point to add a line in their budget to get guys out there. The training is that good. So it's really how much focus you want to get. It's the other side of the fire service, making budget lines work so you can send guys to things like that.
Definitely. Okay. And whenever I have a like a kind of father son, not really a duo, but like, a son that follows in the footsteps of his father, do you feel any sort of pressure that comes with your name and like not like upholding what your dad did, but I mean, there's got to be a little sort of like I don't want to mess this up.
We've actually talked about it, and a bunch of actually the firehouse I'm assigned to now, there's a ton of second and third generation firemen too. A couple legacies, their fathers were lost in 9/11, so I'm in a similar path as those guys. But for me, I'm grateful. My dad is my biggest coach, and we've made fires together at Christiana, but I'm trying to pave my own path. So it puts a little chip on your shoulder that anywhere I go, I'm going to try to be the hardest worker. I don't want anyone to think I got somewhere because of him. I would be grateful if it played a factor, but I'm trying to do it my own way. And I think a lot of people in these shoes try to do that. I want to make my own name, my own path, not rely on that in any way.
Okay, no, it makes sense. And I can respect that 100%. I think a lot of people can respect that for sure. With that being said, are you an engine or a truck guy? Like, what is your passion? If you get to help instruct or you're assigned to help the new guy learn something, like what is your niche in training?
I love it all. I want to be on any rig that's going to a fire, but luckily, career and volunteer, I spent time in both. So, my first assignment in the city of Wilmington was Engine 6. I did just under a year there. They're quartered with Ladder 2, so we hit the streets in the end of January, I think, and then on the next order, I went to the truck. So then I spent almost 3 years in Ladder 2. And then after that, I went to Squad 4, which is the city's SOC company. So it was a new thing to learn. And then at Christiana, you get to do both. I've spent time, in the engine, in the truck, officers of both. So I love it all. I think truck work's a little bit more challenging, and engine work is extremely important. But I became a fireman to save people, so that I think I fall a little bit more into that category, and I want to be searching for people in buildings. So that's where I stand. But engine work is, that's incredibly fun and challenging too. So I hope I get an opportunity to do both for a very long time, although at some point you probably have to kind of pick one. But
Yeah.
right now I'm enjoying all aspects of both.
Okay. All aspects of both. I can. And I definitely. I mean, I know some people might not agree, but like I said before to other people, like true truck work, that's work. Like there's a lot of responsibility. There's a lot of things that you have to get done. Sometimes you don't, or not don't, but you can't rely on having a partner to do things. Throwing ladders by yourself. Forcing doors, searching, like to me, that's it's a lot of work. I think it goes uncredited sometimes because the banter between the engine and truck, but the truck has it's an art form, I'd say.
Yeah, there's a guy I worked with in Wilmington. He says, everyone knows if the engine does well or not, every fire, because it goes out. And then truck work, unless someone's trapped in that building, they don't know how well you searched, how well you did, how many doors you forced until it really matters. So I think the engine's always being watched every fire to see how they do. And the truck side of it is, you have to equally be on your game, but until that day that it matters, you'd almost don't have as much, people watching, pressure watching, because it's not every day you're going to fires with people trapped. But when that day does come, you better be ready. And I think that those are the days that they earn their money.
So you've been on some busy departments, and my question to that is the hype real? Like, they show like Christiana, Aetna, they're, various departments that are busy in the DMV area, Virginia, Washington. Those sets and reps that you get, do you think that contributes to the way you operate, like your skill set?
Absolutely. Yeah, I can Christiana specifically, they're doing about 700 box alarms a year, reported fires or something that gets like that multi-unit response. So we call it a box, four, two, and one. And if they're arriving at them, and luckily a lot of them are first due boxes, first due reports of smoke and fire, they are going through the motions. The inside truck team is, making their way in, all their tool assignments. The engine securing a water supply somehow, shape, or way. They're either laying in, getting their own hydrant, reversing out, but they're initiating the steps to getting a water supply. And it's not a very urban setting, so sometimes that's pretty difficult. 99% of the time, a line is getting stretched as long as it's not a weird building. But for all the private houses, a line's getting put in the street. Everyone's geared up, ready to go. So they're getting reps. And then the time it's on fire, it's not a surprise. And Christiana, uniquely enough, I would say a couple times a year, a fire alarm ends up being on fire, and they're not caught by surprise.
Which is, I am in it, like, and this would be another debate for some, but like, I'm all for if it's a reported box, possible, whatever, structure fire, a reported box, I see nothing wrong with lines hitting the ground, lines being stretched, ladders being thrown, and not to say like you're damaging property, but going through the motions, I think sets up the individual and the department for success where when they show up, turn that corner, and there is smoke or flame showing, like you said, it's not a surprise. It's not being caught off guard. And I love departments that initiate that type of activity.
Yeah, Chief Coppersweat is the chief of Christiana right now, and he fully believes that if it's, that is our best training is all those runs you make. And you see it because there's tons of young guys there. And now there's no difference between, a run that's probably unlikely to be on fire and the time they call you and, tell you people are jumping out the windows. The level of calmness in the cab of those rigs is the same because now they've done it. Hopefully they've, masked up 50 times, 100 times, thousands of times, depending on how much time you have there before you actually have to do it for real. They've, the officer has found their hydrant for that neighborhood dozens and dozens and dozens of times. So now that the time it's on fire, it's really no big deal. And I remember the perfect example of this. There was a new driver, my close friend, John Sexton. He just became a career lieutenant with Ellesmere, which is up the road from Christiana. But we were going, we get hit out for a box. In the middle of the night, it's kind of hard because, you don't really know what you're going to. So everyone's checking their phone, looking for the report, but there's still tones dropping usually by the time we're out the door. So you're well on your way before they start speaking to dispatch. So we're going down and the CAD system's down. So we don't even know we're first due. We're just, we know the general direction we're going and we know we're first, but we don't really know where we're going yet, but we're heading that way. And then they call us and they tell us, people trapped on the second floor, people jumping out the windows. And he's driving, I'm up front. He turns and he just, I'm not gonna curse on your podcast, but he's like, "You motherfuckers," he's, and it's not, because we're gonna go to a fire and he's stuck driving the engine. But the level of confidence that you hear from someone like that, he's not nervous he's gonna go. We've pumped in drills, a couple hundred times leading up to this. There's no level of nervousness, unsure of your job. Just like, oh, damn it, you guys are going to go to a fire and I'm going to be stuck at the pump panel. And when you see that level of confidence in everyone in the rig, and it's just pretty unique. And compared to places that aren't drilling as much, aren't, making those runs that are less likely to be on fire. In Christiana, everything's on fire until you prove it's not. So now you just see this level of confidence, almost a little swagger. And he's like, "God, man, I'm stuck at the pump panel. You guys are about to go to a, absolute, kick-ass fire," which it was. And I always remember that moment because it wasn't like, "Oh, it's on fire, I better remember my steps." No, there was nothing like that. It's like, "Man, this is the night I chose to drive."
Yeah, I mean I've seen it. I've seen that type of mentality from with departments up north, and it truly is a sight to see how calm, cool, collected. It's like They acted like they've been there before. They're not caught off guard. And you know, I think that that's such a vital point to prove of, like you just said, to the department, it's a fire until proven otherwise. They're gonna act like it. They're gonna have lines on the ground, ladders thrown, the apparatus are positioned, they're not parked. Like, all those set up organizations for success.
Yeah, and everywhere I've worked or ridden is pretty much like that. The city of Wilmington was the same way, lines in the street. When I first started there, it was for fire alarms too. So, 3 o'clock in the morning, we were stretching a line to a smoke detector going off. But in hindsight, it's just reps, reps that you got to do. And now you don't even have to think about it. It just comes off the rig correctly. And, that does matter too. I see a lot, some places aren't as prepared in the middle of the night when everyone's waking up, but you're told to do it on fire alarms for your whole first year. It's now it's just second nature. It doesn't matter if it's 3 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, tired, not tired, 20th run of the day, first run of the day, you're ready to go.
Okay. I'm going to move to the topic of leadership because it sounds like you've been a company officer over at Christiana. So my question to you is, what does leadership look like as a company officer?
I've been personally I've had been in charge of the tower there and the engine, so it's kind of a lot newer people ride the engine, which is good and
Okay.
bad, but so it I think it's a little different. But for me, what I try to do, and I think it's worked pretty well, is one, I'm always the hardest worker, so you lead by example. The runs you don't want to put your air pack on, the runs you don't want to, like, for me, I have my own habit, so I know if I'm being lazy. When you're a company officer and you're in that role, you don't really get to be lazy. You set the tone for the whole crew. The same thing goes with drilling in the firehouse. And I think almost every officer there, because of the program they have in place to become an officer, you're the first one to drill on whatever we're drilling on. One, so you can get your reps, but you're never going to ask somebody to do something that you're not going to do yourself. So, if we're hitting the blue door, you're taking reps with the guys. And then, on scenes, you step back and you let the men work. But I think in the firehouse setting, if you want buy-in, you're willing to do whatever, that you're asking them to do. So,
Makes
and
sense.
there's just I the way I think about it is that there is no lazy days if you're the company officer. And I've really only done it at Christiana in a role for an extended period of time, a couple of years. But you don't leave the firehouse unless your reports are done. You don't turn it over to the next guy unless everything is ready to go. So that's I think leading by example is probably the best way to get some buy-in from your guys.
Definitely. And definitely, I think you hit it on it earlier too. Going first on whatever the situation, whatever training scenario it is, letting them see. That way, if you fail, which to me, it's okay to fail in training, the other men and women see it and they're like, okay, like he's failed. No one's perfect. That means, if I fail, I don't need to feel bad. I just need to figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah, I think one of the most difficult things in that setting is, everyone you're there with that you're pretty close with, your closest friends in the world are riding those rigs. But when you're now trusted to be the company officer and someone does make a mistake or chooses a bad choice, now it's pretty tough to be the company officer because now you're, disciplining them, speaking to them, and that's a hard conversation. And I laugh because the few times I had to do it, and one time I was speaking to a very close friend, and I said, and now we use this line to train new guys, but it's like this conversation is going to hurt me a lot more than you hearing it. It's harder for me to say it than it is for you to hear it. But and then you go with your whatever you had to tell him that he did wrong or chose incorrectly. But once you realize that those conversations are necessary for the good of the organization and you're put in that role to make the organization better, you have to have it. And if you're not willing to have those conversations, then there's plenty of room on the back step. But yeah, those are the hardest days, I think. And in a place that has tons of young guys coming through and people learning at all different levels. You got guys that have been in the fire service for 50 years and you got guys that are in the fire service for 50 minutes. It's a pretty wide range. And you're in Christiana's very unique stance. There's career employees, there's part-time employees, there's volunteers. And but the way it's viewed is if you're that person for that day, that is your role. So you could have a chief in the back, he's just a fireman that day. You could have a fireman up front and a lieutenant in the back, but they're pretty strict on the position you're riding. You're making those decisions for those runs, and you're trusted to make the right ones.
I'm sure it's a little nerve-wracking if, like, you had a you're riding at Christiana and you have a chief in the back acting as a fireman, but they're kind of not looking over your shoulder, but they are looking. Like, they're looking to see what calls you make, how you talk on the radio, things of that nature, correct?
Oh, after everyone. What's cool about Newcastle County in general, City of Wilmington included, when there's a reported fire, you can go on the app and listen to it. And if it's a fire, there could be a couple hundred people listening. Nothing gets said on that radio that not everybody n knows.
Okay. All right. I get that. I get that. With do you find the that do you find conversations with you and your dad particularly challenging at times? Because back in his day, they did things this way. And the new age of the fire service is trending. Not, I want to say towards a different way, but we have new ways of doing things, such as I'm not sure if they did that back, when your father was in the fire service, of like masking up with gloves, sub seconds, third sub 30 mask up times. Like, do you guys have little conversations about that?
Yeah, he's a little bit more informal with that. If you ever listen to him speak, he said he's been a one hand free guy his whole life. He likes to get a nice seal. He keeps one glove off in his other hand, and obviously he's been doing it longer than most of us have been alive. So he's not going to change now. But if you've ever been to a fire with him, and you can ask the young guys at 12, he's the first one through the door every time. So it's not that we don't put a time standard on it, but you can't be slow. And new guys are taught with their gloves. I'm sure if someone made a case that they wanted to be quick without it, but they like it, and that seal would be fine. I was taught from day one with my gloves, and now it'd be weird if I didn't. But yeah, you just and there's enough minor fires and enough fires in general there that the people that are struggling it to mask up in a timely fashion, and that's just something you work on in the firehouse. And flip it back to Wilmington where I worked. Everyone in the morning for the most part, and a gentleman I worked with in squad four, but he's promoted now in engine one, Vinny Denizio. He was the senior man at the squad when I got there, and everything he did in the morning he wore his gloves for. He checked the EMS bag, the struts. I mean, we carried everything. We were a special ops company. For his hour plus long rig check, he wore his fire gloves, and no one masks up better quicker with gloves on. So then I started doing it, and now that's something I've carried to Christiana, and now I do it in New York. I do the whole rig check with my fire gloves on, and it's something super minor like that, and now you're used to it. You don't know any other way. So
Okay.
it's cool to have those experiences in different places, because I take something from everywhere, and
Right.
that mentorship and guidance is now, it's going to carry me the next chunk of my, career. But
Okay.
stuff like that really does matter.
No, definitely, definitely. I've never heard of an individual doing that, but I might have to try that. So when you do your thorough rig checks, you got gloves on. I wear my gloves. I don't come off the rig. If it's ever reported some sort of fire call, I come off the rig with my gloves already on. That way I get used to the dexterity and things, but I've never done it for a full truck check, so I might have to do that.
Yeah, I don't know what made him start, but I remember watching him my first day at the squad, and I started doing it. And now, grabbing that tiny zipper on the EMS bag isn't that hard because you've been doing it,
Right.
every day for. And at that point, he had probably been assigned to that piece of apparatus since it got there. He'd done it hundreds of times, and now that's just what he does.
Okay. All right. With that being said, what if this is a opinion question, opinion-based question. What do you think the fire service is doing right or can improve on when it comes to recruitment and retention?
Ooh, that's a tough one, because I mean, New York's its own beast, so I'll probably stay away from that. But it's just so big, I wouldn't even know how to have an opinion with that. The right people seem to make it to the right houses. So, but a smaller place like the city of Wilmington, that's always looking for more applicants. Christiana, that bases their entire existence on people knowing about them. That's how you get people to want to ride there. But Chief McPartland, he's Deputy 12, he always says you got to let firemen be firemen. So it's the, it might be enforced at the beginning, but letting people stretch lines on the bullshit boxes and just letting firemen be firemen is what gets buy-in. Christiana is unique. Every single person there, for the most part, wears a GoPro, a helmet cam, or some sort of recording device. And it's two things. It's recruiting. They post cool videos. I like seeing those videos as much as the next guy. And, but it's like game film. So after every fire, you'll see guys huddled around the house watch, and they're watching, how'd you force that door? How'd you make that search? Did you notice the overhead? Was that line open for as long as you really thought it was? So there, it is nice to have some game film, but it's also used to recruit. But I think it's when you're looking for those people that are, this is their life. It's not just a career. This is, they are a fireman. That's what they are. That's what they want to be. It comes down to everything: the your hose spec, the rigs you build, the culture you have. And I think that goes a long, long way to getting the people you want to apply to your organization. That if you want people banging down the doors to work there, it's everything. It's every decision that admin make should be based on firemen being able to do their job. The hand tools you buy, the hose bed, how it's laid out, how long is your apparatus. It's as silly as, what do you let the guys wear, whatever fronts they want. There's uniformity, but like, what air packs are you buying? Is everything with the guy, the end user, in mind? And I think that's how you recruit the people you want to work there, ride there, whatever it might be.
Right. That and definitely the whole, I think that the most important thing is let firemen be firemen. Let the sets, the reps, the training kind of, cultivate that culture within your department. And I don't see a shy of applicants not wanting to come ride there.
Yeah, I mean, 12 now, they're posting something on Instagram every day, which is cool because, being far removed now, I'm, living up in New York now, I get to see what's going on there, who's making fires, but you also just see what runs they're making. Wilmington's trying pretty hard too, you see. And even FDNY, they got their people running their social media accounts. That's how you get the word out there. It's how you see what, where the fires were, how they did. If you're into the job, it is important to keep a tab on, what's going on around you.
Right. Okay. With my next question for you, I'm pretty sure I know the answer because you mentioned FDPN. So, do you believe in outside training? Do you think firefighters should get outside their own bubble, outside their own department, and attend outside training?
Oh, absolutely, 110%. If anyone's ever given the opportunity to go to FDTN, there's nothing as realistic as that training. The only thing that's different about the fires there than the ones you'll go to at work or, at the firehouse is you know when those are coming because you're there. You know you're going to go to a fire, but the fires are real. They're challenging. You're talking on the radio. You're riding a rig in. You're sizing up buildings. You're keeping yourself oriented. There is no, really easy fires there. You can start with an introductory class, like an engine one, truck one, where there's some classroom time and you're learning from the absolute best. Jim McCormick gets, his instructors are top notch. And what's really important is whether you read it in their newsletter, you see it on their website, you watch their videos, or you attend in person, the message is the same from every instructor. And they always say there are some big names there. You get Timmy Klett from FDNY, Sandy Lassa, and the list goes on for forever. Mike Lombardo, tons of guys teach there. There's not a single ego there. It's just a place to learn, practice, get better. Everyone is there for the same reason. And being afforded a chance, I help out there a little bit now. You get just as much teaching being in those fires as you do taking the classes. Luckily, I was able to go there since a young age. So I think I've taken pretty much every class they had to offer, and you learn so much every time. So if your organization can find any room in their budget to send guys out there, it's well worth it. And then even other classes, there's so many groups now teaching every weekend, and some of it people probably don't agree with, some of it they do, but if you're safe doing it, there's no reason not to try to take some classes, take something away from it. Maybe it's not what your department does, but there's just as much benefit in learning what didn't work as what did work for you. So yeah, whenever you can, it's a good idea to just be out training.
Okay. With you moving to New York, Are you on any type of volunteer department, or is it no, not really, because depending on where you're at in New York.
Well, it's not to sound nerdy, but this is my dream job. So all my focus right now is being on the best probationary firefighter I can be, the 92 engine. So it's the shifts are long, you're going in, you're getting there early, you're staying late, you're doing everything that has to be done. So I'm pretty tired when I get home. So not that I would have enough energy to do much else. 6,500 runs a year, there's not much downtime at all. But being a good probie here, you're getting introduced to guys that have worked together for, decades. So you're the newest member of like their family, their house. You do want to show up to everything. And it's not forced per se, but if you want to be, the next member of their group, then you should be there and you should be offering to do everything. So my focus right now is you're on probation for 18 months in New York. My focus for 18 months is being the best probie I can be there and, doing the right thing.
Okay. And how much longer do you have to go on your probation?
I hit a year in about a month, and then I'll have 6 months more. And then New York, they send you on a rotation, so I'll be getting sent to a truck somewhere else for a couple months. I think it's down, it's either 6 months or a year. But you do some time in the opposite discipline, then you come back to your house, and if you're lucky, you make some fires along the way, and meet some cool people. So I actually live in the city right now, so it's I can kind of go in any direction. I'm working in the South Bronx. I live in Manhattan, but which is even fun just living here. The buildings are so unique here. You can't go for a walk without, seeing something cool on a building that you want to learn about.
I did not know that that's how they do. So you spend 18 months as a probie at your assigned station, and then the next once you get off probation, you're rotated to learn another discipline.
Yeah, you'll see it like on the FDNY Instagram. Every once in a while, there'll be a guy that does something really cool, and they'll be like, "Oh, he's on a rotation and blah blah truck or blah blah engine," and they so they're just temporarily assigned there to learn a different discipline, and they'll be heading back to their actual assigned company.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Because I thought once you completed once you completed your time at the Rock and you get assigned to an engine, like that's your primary thing until you decide, oh, I want to try like a truck thing. But I think that way you learn the various. I mean, I like it, but I did not know that's what they did.
And I believe it's normally in a different borough too. So not only are you getting the opposite discipline, you're getting a complete different set of buildings, type of responses. Where I work right now, they call them H types. There's just, very large apartment buildings. That's primarily the fires they do. The buildings they're in are, 5 to 7 story H type. So they're multi-wing buildings, non-fireproof. There's a couple of row frames, private dwellings, a handful of them, but most of the buildings are these large apartment buildings. And then if you go to a different part of the city, you might just have private houses. You don't have a lot of, or they're smaller apartment buildings. And then you flip side, you come to the city and you might have, buildings that are 40, 50 stories tall, residential buildings, commercial buildings. So it is cool to, if you're into it, it's an opportunity to see a different set of buildings.
Yeah, no, I mean that makes sense. I mean, I used to live in New York, just outside of New York City, so
Oh, awesome.
I don't know how. I don't know. It's just New York City is a different animal, man. It's a beast. Like, look at the layouts, how everything is tight. Emergency response. I mean, because New Yorkers, they don't give a damn. Like, they see a fire truck coming, they're like, "You will wait on me," like, there's no care there.
It is a different world for sure.
Definitely. Okay. My next question for you is, I don't even need to talk about staffing because New York is well staffed. I mean, they can throw manpower on a scene like that. So I'm not even going to bother there. But as far as wellness and truly being there for one another, that term brotherhood, what does that mean to you?
Everything, to be honest, these people you're making runs with, something that you could have bad days, good days. So when your brother needs something, you find a way to make it happen. And I see it from every level I've been at. So it's, in the volunteers, it's like that. My closest friends now are, all from the different places I've stopped along the way. But this coming week, September's a big month, obviously, for FDNY. It's the anniversary of 9/11, so there's a lot of prep and memorials, and you're pretty busy there. And then for the city of Wilmington, right before I got hired, they had a triple line of duty death, and also in September, September 24th. So I don't work there anymore, but I'll be there those days too, because those guys are family, and it's just what you do. You're there. So you find a way to show up, be there for one another. If someone needs something, you find a way to drop everything, and God forbid you ever need it on your end, then someone will be willing to do it for you. So.
Oh, absolutely, definitely. Okay. Which characteristic, in your opinion, holds more weight? Years of service, education, work ethic, or on-the-job experience?
On the job experience would hold the most weight for me, and that doesn't always correlate to years on the job, although a lot of places seem to put a big emphasis on that, and it definitely does matter. But you could take a guy that did 10 years in a rig making 100 fires a year and 5,000 runs, or a guy that did 20 years and made 50 run fires a year, that's the same amount of fires. So on the job experience, making those runs, making those fires that are challenging and learning from them and getting better. You don't want to repeat your first year 20 times,
Right.
20 years. So on the job experience and being the afforded the chance to spend time at Christiana, you learn real quick, because you're making thousands of runs if you're a living guy. You're making almost every fire they have. And same thing if you get hired somewhere and you're picking up overtime shifts. The more time you spend there, the more you learn, the more fires you make. And there's always a healthy balance between family and friends and work. But it's or even I remember in Wilmington, when the overtime call comes, and you can choose between going to an engine that is probably not going to have a busy night, or going to the busiest engine that's going to get crushed all night. If you want to go to fires, you take it on the chin and you go to the place that's busy. I mean, I always did. And in a small place like that, it's not that small, but it's five engines, two trucks, a squad company, two chiefs, and they run mutual aid around the city now out into the county. But it's busy enough, and people notice when you are picking, companies that aren't quite as busy, because you want a good night's sleep. And if you're always picking the place that is going to fires and is making runs, your assignment will be that then, if that's what you're trying to get to. So it's small enough that those things do matter. They the chiefs, the higher up, the admin, they know what guys are trying to, give themselves the best chance of going to a fire.
Right. Okay. And that's one of the things, talking a lot of guys' answers that I've talked to, they don't care if they're on an engine, a truck, a squad. The answer, the common denominator is I just want to go to fires for everybody. And it may sound wrong or messed up to the general public, but I truly believe, in order to get good at the job, yes, they're making it better for future generations with things like FDTN and all these cadre groups that are trying to bring realistic training to members, because unfortunately, not everybody works where a truck's doing 6,500 runs a year. I mean, my truck is definitely not doing that. But that's why I try to go to these outside trainings. I try to attend as many classes and lectures that I can to obtain the knowledge. And of course, with hands-on training, hot classes, there's no better training than that, than actually going through the sets and reps and doing the skills.
Yeah, what we always say is you don't wish a fire upon anyone. That destroys lives, and lives are lost and property's damaged. But if there is one, I hope I'm working. I get better at it. And to be honest, whether I hope there's fires or not doesn't cause them. So everywhere I've gone, there's people that always have an issue with wanting to go to fires. There's always a big career versus volunteer. Should you do it? And to be honest, none of my opinion really doesn't matter if I want to go to fires or not, that I don't light them. So, but I do hope I'm working when there are some, and I hope I'm in the firehouse when there is, because I want to be good at my job. And honestly, the more you go to, the better you do get, for the most part. So, and the more experiences you have to lean back on now.
Definitely, definitely. One personal question I did want to ask you. With you being a probie, do they rotate your assignments, or like, how does that work? Like, is it will there be a shift where like you're on the nozzle that day, or do you have to work your way up to that?
So the I'm not sure how the rest of the city works, but a 92 engine, and I'm sure it's been like that at 92 for a very long time. When you're brand new, you're put on backup because you're going to be in between two other firemen, and
Okay.
there is some big decisions that nozzlemen have to get correct. So it's not about not being trusted to do it, but the way our buildings are lined up, when the boss calls for a line, and tells you to come up the B stairwell, if you don't know where that is, and honestly, I've been a fireman before here, and I didn't know how they labeled their staircases like that. So for your first 30 days, you're going to be on backup, so you're following someone, and someone's following you, so you don't, pick the wrong stairwell. And we're going to, our fires are in big buildings. If you pick the wrong stairwell, you might as well be off the ticket. You don't have enough time to, we're stretching. It'll be they use lengths, but for the rest of the,
Right.
we could have 600, 700, 800 foot stretches. If you pick the wrong stairwell, you can go home because the third due engine, the second line, will have the right stairwell. So they until you realize the system you're in and understand, and then you'll start getting nozzle and backup, and then
Okay.
eventually you'll get control. We're a four-man engine, which means we have a nozzleman, a backup firefighter, and a control firefighter. There's a couple engines in the city, and two of them are right near us that are, they call them five-man engines. So they have that door position. They'll actually have four guys on the back step, but we are not one of them. And then after you got the hang of it, you make some runs, make some smaller fires, and you kind of show your ability, you'll get control. And control in our first due area is the difference between, making the fire and not. He's the guy that's, calculating the lengths, making sure they have enough hose, making sure they don't have too much hose. So, and then he kind of follows the water into the building. The second due engine is always paired with us to get the line in service because the stretches are so difficult. But once you're trusted to be on control, we do our schedule on a group system. So if you can ride every position and everyone there can ride every position, based on whose group is in, our a board will tell you where you're riding that day. Of course, the officer and senior men will make sure that's correct. But that way, everyone kind of gets a chance to do everything.
Okay.
If you're trusted to do everything and you're like on an overtime or you're working a swap for a guy or something, then you're probably going to ride control because you're not supposed to be there that day. But other than that, though, you're going to be, in your first year, you'll be riding everywhere, learning all the positions.
That control position seems very nerve-wracking because you're like, he's got that individual's got to know the lengths, make sure you're not running too much or too little. Like that's some pressure.
Yeah, and our control man, he'll kind of take a peek with the officer when they're walking in the lobby of these big buildings and see if he can find where the stair is. He starts chalking doors because you could go through five doors before you even get to the staircase you're going up. So he'll start chalking them. The boss will chalk a couple doors. And then you'll come out and tell the guys and nozzleman and be like, hey, it looks like they went up the C wing. Your staircase is a hard turn behind, whatever, past the first apartment on the right. But you kind of tell the guys where they're going, and then you're back out on the back step, and now you're making sure there's enough lengths if the rig is going to pull away to a hydrant. So which in New York is how they do it, unless there's a hydrant real close. You kind of want to make sure they have enough hose before they drive away. If not, your job's going to be a lot harder pulling it up the street. So
Right,
that's
man.
definitely a trusted position, and the whole job depends on you doing that correctly.
Right, and I'm sure I don't know if you even know like how many apartments that you have in your first due. It definitely sounds like a lot, but with the amount of runs that you have, it's probably hard to try to. I know them as like I call them pre-incident surveys, where you kind of. After a medical call, you're in this apartment call. Hey, let's do a quick walk and try, but you probably don't have the time to really do that, right?
We don't pre-plan unless it's a really difficult building, but we do have a system that it's called SIDS, and it gives us like a lot of information about a building before we even get there. So it'll tell us how
Okay.
many stairwells we have, if they're transverse, and but our bosses, especially there's a lot of probies in my house right now. There's seven of us. So on every EMS run, on every run for carbon monoxide, whatever, they'll the boss might turn and be like, hey, what side's the one side? Or for most of the rest of the country, the A side. And we went around, six flights of doing this, turning,
Right.
every different direction. Now you're in an apartment, you took two more turns to get in the bedroom, and it'll be like, what side's the one side? And the first 30 days they might give you a pass, but by then you better know. So there, like I said, all my focus is on being a good probie. When you're at work, you need to be focused because
at
those
work.
questions will come all the whole time you're there. And at shift change, you'll have a new boss and he'll be doing the same things, and or the same senior man will be asking you those things. And then the questions get more difficult. Where's the fire escape in this apartment? Is there a fire escape? You know, where's your points of egress? You know,
Thanks.
and those
Okay.
questions come, and it's good because it makes you better, and it makes you,
Absolutely.
now you don't go into a building without realizing where all the sides are, no matter how many turns you take, you know. So they're instilling little, you know, tricks and tidbits that you need for the rest of your career.
No, I can, because I'm just like imagining a newer person, like they arrive in their firehouse and the first thing they want to do is like make TikTok videos or Instagram. And it's like, yeah, no, that's not happening.
Yeah, we're no one's really on their phone at work.
That's awesome.
Yeah, people are focused from the senior guy down to the probie. Everyone's pretty much focused on the run at hand.
Okay.
The way the radio system works there, you know, when we go into these buildings for EMS runs, the chauffeur's usually listening up to the Bronx in case there's, you know, we're getting another run or something that we should be on. It's just everyone kind of has their own individual little jobs. You know, you rely on everybody you're with, so everyone's pretty focused when you're there. It's there's no time to take a breath and relax.
That's awesome. I
Exactly.
like it. I personally do. I mean, it makes you focused on the job, getting better, learning your job, especially as a newer person, where as you progress, you can become that senior man that people go to. Hey, oh, you got a question? Go ask Pressler. He knows because you've done the work on that.
Yeah, it's interesting being the new guy again because in Wilmington, not so much Christiana because I was there so often. I pretty much met everybody that came through those doors, and you know, everyone's like-minded, and you're not so much just getting through those doors and showing up is proving yourself there, because there's really no one that isn't drilling or isn't giving their all. Because at Christiana, everyone's there for the same reason, even the career staff and the part, everyone's there to be the best they can. But at work in Wilmington, you know, I was the new guy when I went through the academy, and then I go to, you know, Engine 6 and I'm the probie. I cross the floor and now I'm the youngest guy on the truck. And then after a couple of years, I'm the newest guy in the squad. So you're just pretty much the in New York they call it a Johnny, but I've been the new guy now for my entire fire service career, which is good because it keeps you humble and it keeps your work ethic strong. And you know, now there are no easy days. I'm there to work when I show up to work. But it's and you know, people always joke at work, they're like, oh, you're doing, you know, you're probie again. It's like I've been the probie since the day I went to every new company I've been assigned. So
Right.
and everywhere I went, there was something new to learn. So
Okay.
it kind of set the tone for doing this again. And yeah, it's tough being a new guy, but you show up ready to work, you know, you get a lot of help quick. So
Yeah, and definitely, you like you stated earlier, you're trying to do your own path, but you also realizing, like I try to tell the new people, your last name holds a lot of weight in the fire service. You don't want to be known as that guy, that individual.
no, he would hear it before I would, I'm sure.
Oh man. Before we part, my last question, I always like to ask, and this is not for the guest, meaning you, to boast, but it's just something I always like to ask guests. Where would you like to see yourself end up, retiring at in the fire service? What position? And like I said, it's not a boast thing, but everybody has aspirations. So where would you like to see yourself before you retire?
Right now, being relatively young, I think I'd always want to be on a rig, so a lieutenant or a captain of a company that's going to fires, you know, that maybe has a lot of responsibility, like a SOC company. But right now, I don't really have any interest in being in a Tahoe or a truck or, you know, as a chief level.
Right.
So, you know, New York's interesting because their chiefs get put to work, so that could change as I get a little older. And
Really?
as a captain at 12, I did spend some time in the car, and it is there's a unique responsibility that comes with that, and I was just starting to learn that. But yeah, I think career-wise, I think I'd like to be on a rig, you know, as a company officer.
Okay. And before we part, you mentioned something that I definitely would like to hear if you could shed light on it. So if you're not the incident commander on the scene of a New York City incident, you said sometimes chiefs can go to work.
Well, yeah, in New York, the 1075 chiefs, so once there's a notification of a fire and they, you know, request those units and they kind of fill out the box, you're getting the rescues, the squads, the safety chief. But you get a 1075 chief, and normally he becomes in especially in the apartment buildings. And I think a lot of other places do it too. Like in the bigger buildings in Wilmington, they would do that. But that 1075 chief here, or they'll become like the fire sector chief. So they're going to be, up on the fire floor monitoring all the companies that are there.
Okay.
So that's, at least you're getting pieces of it that way.
Right. Okay.
But
All right.
right now
Awesome.
I love, crawling, searching, being involved, and maybe it'll change when I'm a little older, but that's my focus now.
Okay. Hey, no, and I wish you the best of luck, man. You're approaching a year, 6 months left, and then hopefully whatever ladder you get assigned to in whatever borough, I'm sure I don't have to say anything, but I'm sure you're gonna follow that same path that you're on. So I wish you the best of luck. I want to also throw out there, I appreciate Trevor Good for getting in contact me and you. He was like, "Hey man, I got a guy for you," and I reached out and you accepted. So Trevor, thank you, and Michael, thank you for accepting this interview to do this.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been a blast. It's definitely been a good experience. Thank you.
Yes, appreciate it. You have yourself a good day.
You too.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.